Welcome to Heroin Addiction, presented by That Time I Got Reincarnated in the Same World as an Anime Podcaster, where we prove that target demographics are just a suggestion. I'm Isekai Sensei Sama, aka Brad, and as always, I'm joined by Bento Baggins, aka Ben.
Hello.
So today, we're going to be talking about The Fantasy of a Stepmother, also known as A Stepmother's Martian, which is not the name that we're going to be using. All of the official sources that I've found are Fantasy of a Stepmother. We're going to be going with that one. It's also easier for us to pronounce. Lots of German in this one. So.
Yeah, which I thought I would have an easier time with than I do. I think I'm better at Korean.
Well, you're immersed in those language systems.
Do German words ever end?
Not normally, no.
God damn. Like these Hopefully names I, just keep going and going. Yeah.
Hopefully I can do my German ancestry proud here and not mess up any of these names. So, well, as always, before we get into our discussion, I will read the summary and then we'll get into it. They called her the Iron Widow. When her husband died, he left her to manage not only his vast holdings, but also his four children. Young and inexperienced, Shuri nonetheless tried her best to raise them, despite their bitter attitudes towards her. She is finally free to live her own life as her eldest son marries, only to find herself mysteriously reset to 7 years ago, the night of her husband's funeral. Can Shuri find happiness with this second chance at a new destiny? So, I didn't reread this.
Uh-oh.
I have a pretty good idea. This is one that I really enjoyed when I was going through it the first time. I'd say it's very different from a lot of the other ones that we read.
There's yeah, I think very, that's fair.
It tends to lean towards being realistic. There's not a whole lot of fantasy elements to it. Basically, I think the main fantasy element is she went back in time.
Yeah.
Beyond that, there's not really.
There's a little bit of magic. The lady who travels the world from the Ottoman Turk analog empire.
Yeah, something like that.
So she uses a spell or something to stop a thief.
Yeah, and I wonder how, because in a lot of times they'll portray things like, oh, it's magical, mysterious, when it's like there's something something actually going on that could be real. I don't know. You know, it's there's so little of that that it's hard for me to go like, oh yeah, this is a world with magic versus, you know, no, this is just something they're imagining.
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, since she went back in time, we'll say light magic fantasy.
I think that's fair. You have to look for it.
This one, I think the last episode we did was the one we did with Wit and Moon, right?
Yeah.
So in that one, we mentioned we were doing this and everybody was like super excited.
Yeah.
And was like, oh, that's going to be so good. And so I started reading this one. And for like, I want to say the first 30 chapters, I was not that into it.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, you guys' recommendations were carrying me. I was like, I don't know how I feel about this. I think I messaged you and I was like, there's a tug of war in my brain right now between I love her relationship with the children. I like the motherly aspect of her. That's something you don't get to see in a lot of these. I like how much effort she puts in, how self-sacrificing she is. Like she is a very likable protagonist, one of the most mm-hmm. likable. But then I keep looking, because I'm a trained otome isekai-er now, I keep looking for the male lead. And I'm like, oh, it better not be Jeremy, because I am out. And then, of course,
we should probably, just in case anybody's listening who has not read this, which, you know, hopefully some people, because I want people to come to us for recommendations. But the main plot of the series is that there is this noble, Johannes von Neuschwanstein, and he is dying. Okay. So his wife had already passed away. They have four children together. Jeremy is the oldest, Elias the second oldest, and then the twins, Leon and Rachel. I want to say at the start of the story, Jeremy is 14.
Yes. And Shuri is 16.
Right. Johannes is like, oh, I'm dying, but Jeremy's not old enough to take over the family. There's all this crazy political stuff, and we're a very important family. I think they would be like Margraves or something like that, or Marquis, whatever. It's like not a duke, but also really, really important to the military or whatever.
She's what, a Marchioness?
Marchioness.
Marchioness? Is that how it is?
I think that's how it's pronounced.
I don't know.
So anyway, he's like, I'm going to die. Jeremy's not old enough to take over the family. This is going to cause a huge problem. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring in another woman, and I'm going to teach her all the stuff so that she can fill in the gap until Jeremy's old enough. And now this is a bit where I'm like, what exactly is going on here? Because what he does, he goes out and he basically buys a young girl from this mm-hmm. poor noble family, Shuri. And at the time, she's 16, something like that, mm-hmm. 15 or 16. And it's like, why wouldn't you find, like, was she the only one available? Like, I don't understand why.
I was going to say, in your summary, the word woman was doing a lot of work there. Yeah. Because, like, what he does is brings in a child bride. And I joked with somebody about how, on last podcast on the left, they have a running gag where all these cult leaders bring in child brides. Mm. And he's like, you got to raise your wife. That's how you get the perfect woman.
Yeah.
And somebody in this comic says he raised his wife. And I lost it.
There's, on the one side, I can see like, oh, like she's young and malleable, so he can like get all this information into her, right? Raise her to be the matriarch that he wants her to be for his family. But on the other hand, it's like, she's too young. Like, she's too young to be the head of a family.
So, you know? I was knowing you and having talked for a while with Wit and Moon, and knowing that you guys recommended this, I read this very charitably mm-hmm. as, there's something about her. Like, she's got to be the special somehow. And I even did get the vibe that he was not interested in any kind of pervy stuff. He seemed very businesslike with her.
Well, we'll see.
Am I wrong?
We're just getting into some flashback stuff in the latest chapters.
I saw some of that.
So I can't say anything for certain right now. I do know, light spoilers, that not everything was as good as it seemed. And I know we're at the end of the very last chapter that I read, which I believe was 86 or something like that. It was immediately before something bad is about to go down with Johannes. So,
okay, well, maybe.
I'm sorry. 95. Oh my God. 95.
Okay. So I read that one. I thought he was just going to die. Maybe I'm wrong.
Not yet.
I don't have any web novel spoilers.
Maybe we should have waited another couple weeks to do this
one. Uh-oh. Well, maybe I'm retroactively going to hate this, but...
But I think the, you know, sort of going back to why we needed to give some background in the first place is that between Shuri, who is 16 at the start, we'll say, and Jeremy, who is 14, they have a strange relationship because there is, at least after she regresses, right? After she goes back in time and does it right this time, she's very motherly to them, especially the younger ones, Elias, Leon, and Rachel. It's not really a question there. So even though she's only 5 years or something older than Elias, there's a very clear mother-child relationship.
The 5 years between 11 and 16 are a hell of a 5 years. Like right. that's weighted more heavily than, you know, 20 to 25.
But when you get to Jeremy, there's more of like some weirdness.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, the way that Jeremy looks at her, the way they talk to each other sometimes, especially after the time skip, they're older. And I forget how old they are after the time skip, but...
time skip is 3 years.
So he's 17? 17. Yeah. And it's definitely like, this feels weird. Like, you can't quite put your finger... There's not like any hard evidence or anything, but the feeling you get from it.
So the tug of war in my mind was interactions with the children. Very cute, very adorable. Love the mama bear thing. Love the competent protagonist dealing with all the political machinations and economics and everything. All the usual Tomie Sakai stuff. But then there is this tug of war. And for me, honestly, like the Jeremy thing, I understand Jeremy's complicated feelings towards her. And she doesn't seem to reciprocate any romantic feelings towards Jeremy.
Well, yeah. And that is, I think that's probably the important part is that Shuri does not see him that way, even if maybe he sees her that way.
Yeah. This is a thing that was like probably destined to come up with, you know, I guess two attractive young people living under the same roof who are not biologically related. I don't know. I guess that in comics that has to happen, but, I didn't even really like the Nora stuff though. Like,
So we'll throw that in there. The person who is probably the male lead, almost certainly the male lead, Nora von Nuremberg. So his dad, Albrecht von Nuremberg, is the Duke, right?
Yeah, they're an offshoot of the Imperial family.
Right. So his cousin is the prince, the crown prince, Theobald. Theobald von Baden-Bismarck. Nora is almost certainly the male lead. There hasn't been anything yet that is like, 100% they're doing this now. But it's all but confirmed. And the thing is Nora is the exact same age as Jeremy. So,
well, yeah. And so this is the tug of war in my mind is I don't think there's nothing like crazy unacceptable here. There's nothing that makes you like a bad person for liking it, but it makes sense that they would have chemistry even because at this point an 18-year-old and a 17-year-old, because I think she's not quite 19 when the time skip happens yet, so they're like a year and a half apart. That's fine. What makes it weird for me is she really throws herself into the role of trying to become a mother to these kids, and she is very mature and he is not. He, when she, like Nora, when she meets him, is basically even less mature than his age because he doesn't come from a great family situation. He's rebelling against that a bit. And there's all these issues that really highlight the weird power dynamics between the two of them.
Yeah. I would definitely say post time skip.
It's better.
They really show that like Nora is an adult now.
Yeah.
Even though he's still 17 at the time. But I think his bad family situation is sort of forcing him to be older, because if you contrast him against Jeremy, where they do have a lot of similarities, Jeremy's probably still more childlike in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I post time skip Nora is a lot easier to accept as a male lead, but that's the weird thing with this one is the when it dips back into romance is when I start getting pulled out, because I don't really like the ships.
See, I think pre-time skip, that, you know, they hinted at some romance stuff a little bit, but they sort of stayed away from it, and it was more Nora-centric. Like, he was looking at Shuri like, I like her, but she was not looking at him that way.
Yeah.
And even now, post-time skip, it's more Nora going, hey, I need you to see me as a man rather than a boy. And then Shuri sort of coming to that realization.
Yeah. And I guess on the other hand, from Shuri's perspective, like I said, it's not unreasonable for her to want to date somebody near her age, because like, what is the other option? She dates somebody else who has four kids.
Right.
That means they're going to be like in their 50s. Like, so I get it. Like, she's been put in an impossible situation.
I mean, she could always date that really old creepy priest.
No, we'll talk about him. It's a challenging one, because I think I went in with expectations of all the other Otome isekais we've done, where by chapter 20, I'm going to be able to pick out the male lead. If there's a triangle, I'm going to know who's the short side.
I should probably establish that, like, while we were like, oh, this is such a great, oh, we're going to do this one, right? We didn't tell you anything about
it. No.
Not like a single word about it. And so you really went in completely blind. And coming from all of these other series that we've done,
yeah, that was
that the were context. All like high drama romance kind of thing going on. Like, this is starkly different than those.
It is. And I think that's why, like, for the first, like I said, I want to say like 30, maybe 40 chapters, I was like, this might be the first one I give like a weird score to, because I kept being terrified of like where this romance stuff was going. And to add some additional context, on my other podcast, we covered the Mortal Instruments this month, which is like a whole ball of wax when it comes to families.
Go listen to Words About Books to find out where the link is between this.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, I was already like, I can't go through this again, Brad. But
weird how that lined up.
Yeah. It's the spring of something. No, I did warm up to it though. I have to say, like, after I got a feel for the vibe that this was going for, I did start to appreciate it more. This is way different than the other Otome isekais we've read. What's also weird to me, though, is like, I'm starting to like establish some kind of weird relationship with the Bato comments where it started off ironic. I was like looking at these and going, oh, look at these dumb people. And now it's just like, That's half of it. Like, you need to, like, that's half of why I enjoy these comics now. Because what disturbed me about the Bato comments is, like, they were doing nothing to dissuade me from the idea that this was just another Otome Isekai. Because, like, you read the comments, and it's like, Nora's just introduced. He's a struggling 14-year-old boy who just ran into a cute girl who is, he thinks is just another cute girl, but, like, bro, you're signing up to be the step-parent to four kids if you marry this chick.
You're signing up to be the stepfather to your best friend.
Yeah. And all of the Bato comments are like, heart, 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 hey, daddy, blah, blah, blah.
Like, I think a lot of times...
I know they're joking.
Well, no, I think a lot of times the people in the comments, I think Otome Isekai fans in general are just gluttons for punishment and run out and look at spoilers all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
So I imagine that they already knew he's the male lead. They already saw pictures or whatever from the web novel or whatever of what he looks like when he grows up and whatever. And so they're putting that on it, even though we're not there yet.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think, like, post-time skip, I thought the stuff between Shuri and Jeremy was a little more muted. Like, he's still got complicated feelings about her, but I think we're not looking at it like we were looking at the... Oh, what was the last one we read with the weird brother...
Oh, the villainous turns the hourglass.
Kane. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's not a Kane situation. Yeah. Like, Jeremy is... he wants her to have a life. He wants...
The feeling I get from it, the main feeling that I think he has is respect. I think after everything that they went through, I think he respects her the most. And after that, there's sort of a weird tug of war between his love as a son versus maybe these romantic feelings. And I think he's struggling between those two. But overall, it's he respects her and wants to protect her.
I get the vibe he would be okay with her marrying someone. But perhaps not Nora.
Yeah. They haven't really dealt with that yet. I don't think you sort of would have to think that everybody knows just from like watching Nora. But they haven't like outright said anything yet. So I don't know that conversation hasn't happened yet. So
I'll be interested in that one. So how much of the, like, I don't know how many spoilers we want to get into, but I would at least like to talk about the first season sort of climax with the trial.
Yeah. And I think something important to note in all of this, you know, we've been talking a lot about these romance things because it's like sort of weird and uncomfortable at times. And so that's sort of the interesting thing to talk about. But I feel like the main point of the whole series is the political intrigue. The drama that happens within and around these big important political families. The Marquis family of the Neuschwansteins, the Ducal family of the Nurembergs, and then the imperial family, the Bismarcks. There's this weird triangle that these houses have that are
the church.
The church is like a weird hanger on. But like you've got this triangle of these houses. They're so linked to each other, but they all have these family problems, these inner family problems that then are coming out and becoming nation problems because of the fact that these families are so important. And I think that's like the whole point of the series and everything else, the weird romantic stuff and the stuff that's going on with the church to an extent is all just sort of like extra stuff on the outside.
Well, yeah, and I want to be clear, like my struggles with the weird romance, again, I don't want to seem like I'm like judging or saying it's this weird like fetishy thing. It's not. It seems like aware of the complicated nature of it all, and
right. It's not running around going like, hey, this is totally cool and fine. Like, isn't it neat that they're romantically involved with each other? And no, it's like it's very much presenting it as like, hey, look at this weird, uncomfortable situation. Isn't this weird? What's going on here?
And it's partly to help demonstrate the burden placed on Shuri.
Mm-hmm.
Because when her story, she didn't want to be reincarnated. That's my favorite kind of isekai, is when somebody was out of a bad situation and they get pulled back into it and they don't necessarily want to be there, but they can make the best of a bad situation. She was finally free of this family. She thought she was finally going to live her own life, because you forget, because she is so able to make the best of a bad situation, that this guy did just come and like rip her out of any chance of a normal life. And yeah, he hooked her up with wealth and everything, but that's the reason she can't have a normal relationship with a boy her age. And
oh, there is something we glossed over this a bit, where we were talking about like, oh, she's 16 and he's 14. But the fact is when she regresses, she has an additional 7 years of mental age.
Yeah.
Like, she screwed up in the first timeline because she, like, I don't know if neglect is the right word, but she didn't foster familial relationships with the children, and they came to resent her. Well, I mean, they sort of started off resenting her and then continued to.
Well, and she lacked the wisdom to interpret. Oh,
right. And that's my point, is like, she needed those 7 additional years for herself to grow up in order to get that right when she went back. And then like, she goes back and we're looking at this at like, oh, she's 16, he's 14, but no, she's 23 or whatever. And he's 14.
Well, and everybody keeps talking about what a genius. Now, maybe he is, maybe there's things we don't know. Like, what a genius Johannes is for spotting the talent of this girl. But like, she did like everything everybody was worried about, putting a 17-year-old in charge of this estate, happened.
Well, she got it right in the first timeline, in so much as the family is still together. Like, it is still an important family in the empire.
Right up until the point where she was murdered, yeah.
Right, yeah.
And then I'm sure they were fine after that.
Oh, also, there is some flashbacks forwards. At some point, somebody is remembering the past timeline. Or maybe it was
she's remembering the future.
But we saw that Nora was in love with her in the previous timeline as well. So there is that. They're destined to be together. But he couldn't express his feelings before she got murdered. So
there's a lot to be revealed. You know, for as long as this is, there's a lot we don't know.
Oh, yeah. No, it definitely takes its time without being monotonous. I think there's a strong point there. Like,
yeah,
there's at no point while I was reading it did I go, oh, this is taking forever. In fact, when it went on hiatus for a really long time, I was like, when is this coming back? I really miss this.
This does a really good job of developing each of the characters. Because, yeah, you're right. We got too caught up in the romance, because the real focus is like her relationship within the family and trying to protect the family. Each of the kids needs to be developed.
Yeah. If anything, the romance I'm most interested in is the romance between Rachel and that foreign prince.
Yeah, I I had this weird moment when they did the time skip and the twins are older and I was like, oh, I'm not ready for this. Like, I'm not.
No, the babies.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not ready for her to be dating. I'm sorry.
Hey, she's gotta go be queen of, I don't know where he's from. Did they say India or something like that?
I don't know. Off to the nunnery. I don't know. I'm not ready. I don't know if I'll ever be ready. Yeah, I was surprised how much that one got me. I was like, no, they're children. Come on. they still are. Like, she is still a baby. She can't be more than like 11, right?
I think that sounds right. After the time skip, I think, yeah, 11.
Yeah, that's too young. You can't date at 11, sorry.
I mean, yeah. I agree with that. But also, weird aristocracy stuff. So.
I know she's a noble. She has to cultivate relationships, but...
You know, there's also the... We're just going to keep talking about the romance stuff, even though it's not important. I'm wondering what Jeremy's going to do, because he's like... I don't remember if it's official yet, but he's basically betrothed to O'Hara von Heinrich, which is another pretty important noble family. But they're not one of like the main three. However, they have shown, and also showed in like the previous timeline, that she doesn't really like Jeremy. Like, she's going to do this for the political reasons, but like, and they'll like get along, but they're not really, they don't really like each other.
I wondered where that was going. Do they have the potential to like each other? Because well, Shuri seems in favor. Well, I do have some
spoilers about that, but I won't get into that. What I will say is that O'Hara and Jeremy will not end up together. And they're definitely starting to show you that. There's some conversations that Shuri and O'Hara have where Shuri is like, are you sure this is what you want to do? And she's like, yes, this is what my father needs me to do for the good of our family. And she's like, but is this what you want to do?
Well, so that was the other thing I was thinking is she seemed very concerned that their arrangement be natural. And I wondered if it was like she sees herself.
Yeah. No, I think that's exactly that situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's going, hey, I had a real shitty time because I was forced into this marriage that wasn't good for me. Maybe you shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
But what that does is that leaves a void for who does Jeremy marry? Because Shuri can't really move on until Jeremy gets married. But that also shows us that like Shuri is a good and kind person, because even though she could be like, hey, Jeremy and O'Hara, you can get married next week and I can get the hell out of here, she's not doing that.
No, but I gotta wonder, like, where does it go? Does Shuri want to move on as much as she used to?
Well, there is that. Now that she actually has a good relationship with the children, she's not really as keen to run away so much as she was before.
That's another complicated thing, though, because she did fall into the mother role, but she's so young. Like, right now, she can manage this whole estate, and she's got all this talent for it and all this training. Jeremy does have to take over the household. She can't stay there and, like, stunt his career.
Right.
So is this going to be the one that finally just embraces the Yuri relationship and she goes and she travels the world with that magical lady and they go on all these like Thelma and Louise adventures?
Probably not.
No, probably not. Okay, so...
Right, I think we've exhausted all of the romantic stuff.
Yes, there's no more romance stuff. So there's a whole thing hinted at Shuri being special. Beyond just a talented you know, 16-year-old girl who was capable of learning all the business stuff.
I mean, go ahead and remind me.
She looks exactly like the former empress. And whenever, like, there's a scene where the current emperor looks at Shuri coming out of a building, and he wonders to himself if this is Johannes's revenge.
Does that necessarily make her special so much as maybe Johannes did pick her for a very specific reason?
Well, that would still make her... There's something about... There's a reason beyond just her talent that he picked her. If it's just that she looks like the Empress, okay. Why would Johannes want to get revenge on the Emperor?
And I don't think we have enough information for that yet.
Yeah, so again, like, she's... It's just another layer of webbing she's caught up in.
Yeah.
There was a game... She's part of a game she doesn't even know is being played.
Oh, we did leave one romance thing out, which is sort of important, which is the crown prince is into her as well. He's also the same age as Jeremy and Nora.
I don't like the crown prince. Also, like, every single one...
I don't think you're supposed to.
Every single one of these kids is abused, though, so, like, that complicates things.
And maybe that's what it is. So there's the three fathers, Johannes, Albrecht Nuremberg, and I don't have a name for the emperor, but Emperor Bismarck.
Yeah.
Maybe I can't remember if there was a hint of this before, but the previous empress who looks like Shuri, maybe they were all after her as well, and at that time the emperor got his way. And so Johannes brings in Shuri, and now it's between Jeremy, Nora, and Theo.
Well, what I want to know is what happened to that empress.
Yeah.
Because she didn't die of old age if they were all around at the same time.
And the previous empress is Theo's mother, right?
Is she? I thought...
I can't remember.
I think the current wife.
So Elizabeth, the current empress, is definitely the younger prince's mother, Latreion.
Yeah. Okay. So what is her deal? Because she's game playing too.
Yeah. Honestly, there's so many little political pawns getting moved around all the time. It's really, and I think that's the point, is that it's difficult to know what is, like, actually going on in, like, behind the scenes and in people's minds at any point.
So I'm going to, I want to spoil up to the trial in the first season.
Sure.
So there's this, the political structure of the empire is such that there is the imperial family, a parliament of nobles, and the church.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are the three big decision makers. And everything starts kind of, like, innocuously with the Christmastide celebration, where they're, like, having a hard time coming up with the funding for Christmastide, and they're like, well, maybe we cancel Christmas this year. And the church is like, you can't cancel Christmas. It's Christmas. God would be offended. And so they're like, okay, well, we'll meet again next time to talk about it. And so they all agree that they have to have Christmastide. That's the whole big thing. And then the next meeting, the church comes, and the church is like, oh, by the way, we're not going to give any money, no church money, towards the Christmastide thing. And what the church wanted to do, and what happened in the past, was the nobles would raise taxes to pay for the celebration, which would stoke a peasant's rebellion. But Shuri heads that off and says that the nobles should all just chip in and fund the celebration themselves. And she donates, like, the largest chunk. And that pisses the church off. And the church is weird, too. They're, like, really weird. Like, they're like, women should not speak. Women should be seen and not heard and maybe also not seen.
Let's be fair. They're very much like the real church. But then on top of that, you have individuals in the church who are just like real weird.
Yeah, the main guy is like that dude from the Da Vinci Code. He's got all the like, the scars on his back.
And yeah, so there's, you know, there's the structure. You got the Pope and the Cardinals and all that kind of stuff that you expect. But then they have their own political stuff going on inside the church of like, who's going to be the next Pope? Who's going to get to be a Cardinal? You know, all this stuff going on. So Richelieu is sort of the main antagonist of the church plot points. And he's a psychopath. He seems clinically a psychopath.
He seems like a fanatic. Like because there's all the self-flagellation stuff and
yeah. Honestly, I think his backstory flashback thing that they did a really good job of like showing you why he's like this, and that's great that like there's a good reason for it, but also no, ooh, go away.
Yeah, yeah, sorry man, your brain broke, you gotta go.
Yeah, like he shouldn't be allowed near other people, basically.
He should be seen and not heard and maybe not seen.
He's got this really weird thing where he's like, hey, I think I'm romantically attracted to Shuri, but also that's not cool. I'm a priest. And so instead I'm just going to be a crazy asshole.
Oh, it's very, like, very Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yeah. And like, hey, maybe she should die so that I don't have these feelings anymore. And like, yeah, hell it's just
fire.
Just the whole, every time he's on the page, I'm just like, no, 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 go away, please.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's just made to be like the most unsettling character. He doesn't have eyebrows.
Yeah.
That's a big thing.
But he's also like, at least the before the time skip, he was like the prince's like religious teacher kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so he's always trying to like steer the prince in a certain direction. And then I think part of that is he's trying to get the prince more involved with Shuri because of a reason to get Shuri out of her position of, I honestly have a hard time keeping track of what his game is.
Yeah, he's a strange dude, but he also seems to think that there's a hint that he might suspect she's been reincarnated or she has some foreknowledge.
Yeah.
And like that seems like a dangerous position for her to be in.
Well, and every time he talks about it, it's really difficult to be like, does he actually know something or is he this just part of him being creepy?
Yeah, cool. Because like I could see her getting accused of witchcraft or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the Christmas tide thing happens and there's like this big party. Everybody's got to go. And the crown prince is trying to get Shuri alone so he can put the moves on her. And he does. And there's a comical anime situation where he falls and she can't get out of the way and she hurts her wrist. And Jeremy walks in at exactly the wrong time and punches him in the schnoz.
Which was, honestly, good job, Jeremy.
Yeah.
That was the right thing to do.
Yeah, because it was one of those situations where it's like, it's not what it looks like, but I wish it was.
I know. See, it's not
what it looked like, but he wishes it was.
Right, the prince wished. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he deserved it. But the problem being is that you can't just punch a royal in the face, even if they're doing something bad.
No, but to the crown prince's credit, he's not the one that took things out of hand. He seemed willing to let everything go. But his mom is like, no, I'm going to make this a test for Shuri. And I'm going to make as big a deal out of this as I possibly can. And I'm going to say he's guilty of trying to assassinate the prince. And the hand that touched the prince should be cut off. And so Jeremy is thrown in jail awaiting trial. And Shuri has to maneuver. And there's only one way out of this, right? And that is the head of a royal family can ask for a duel of honor. Trial by combat, I guess. And I don't know what, like, okay, so the duel of honor, right? That's a thing they can ask for. And she can't ask for it because she's a woman, I guess. I don't know. Or she just doesn't want to fight. So I guess if she makes Jeremy the head of the household, he could fight. And he's pretty good at fighting. He trains to be a knight all the time. But who would he fight? The crown prince?
I don't know. And a lot of times in these situations, you can choose a representative to fight for you.
Yeah.
So I would think you would want to do that. And I would almost certainly think that a royal would pick a representative, right?
Yeah. So like, why didn't she pick somebody? This is how I thought it was going to go. I thought she was going to pick Nora. And they were just going to have a fight. But no, they couldn't. She wasn't allowed to do that. So she has to get Jeremy to be the head of the household. That's her solution. And she's going to do that by having her marriage annulled so that she was never the wife or mother. And nobody wants that to happen, but it's the only way to save him. So she's going through all this stuff to try to make it happen. She digs up old letters where Johannes admitted he never consummated the marriage, which was a relief.
Yeah, good for him.
To be honest,
he probably did some other really bad stuff, which we're going to find out soon. But he never touched her sexually, so that's cool, I guess.
Oh man, like I don't know what's going to happen. That's like worse than that. Oh man. Okay. Well, so that never happened. So she's asking for an annulment. She needs to get his brother-in-law, who he wrote the letter to testify to its authenticity. And that's a whole big thing. But she manages to do that. And this is the other part where I thought she's more than she seems. Maybe you know the answer to this already, but I didn't. The whole trial is coming to a head. They're about to prove that the marriage could be annulled. When the priest who's in charge of the trial asks, well, then why did he even marry you? And it's like, first, that's a rude question.
Yeah, right.
Second.
Also, everybody can tell that already.
The brother-in-law is about to answer. He says, I think she's... And then the current empress is like, that's enough. Okay. We're done here. Test passed. You can hit my son. I don't care anymore. And trial over. And then the priest is like, with all due respect, madam. She's like, trial over. No takes you back. So he's got to go.
Excuse me. I'm the empress. Yeah. I just said we're done here. Done here.
And I like that because that's like very true to history of all the times where the nobles are like where the church corrects a noble and you're not supposed to do that. And the noble's like, fuck you. And he's like, well, you know, God. So I serve a higher power. And yeah, it's like, well,
and God put me here. So
yeah. Well, and that's been the eternal debate between, between monarch and church.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. There's probably, there's a reason why, Shuri is important to the three families beyond the fact that she is keeping the Neuschwansteins going. Right. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we have a good reason for that yet. And maybe we'll get it in these flashbacks that are happening right now. But maybe we'll have to wait even longer. I don't know where this story ends. So,
but even this all, like, these are the interesting things to talk about on a podcast, but this is still like the icing. Like the meat of this story is her bonding with the kids. That's like 90% of the text.
They definitely in the first season.
Yeah.
Yes. I would say in the second season, it sort of becomes the bonding with the children becomes the place where you breathe, because they have bonded already. They love each other. The time that they spend together is the nice, simple, like, this is nothing bad is happening right now. She's going to spend some time with Rachel, and they're going to pick a dress. And, oh, Rachel met this prince, and nobody knew he was a prince yet. And look at their interaction. Isn't that cute? Oh, and now she's going to go spend time with Leon, and he's really into books, and he's super smart. And so he's probably going to do something great and support Jeremy when he grows up, and that's going to be great. And they're going to read together, and oh, how sweet. Oh, and what's going on with Elias? Elias is going out and gambling. Oh, we're going to have to deal with this. What's going on here? Oh my God. He pawned away the gift that Shuri gave him, and he's really upset. He can't get it back. And oh my God. And Jeremy, you know, Jeremy has to deal with the fact that he's going to have to be the head of the house pretty soon. And what? Oh, he heard about Elias doing this. Hey, Nora, help me deal with this situation. There's all this stuff going on, but it's all like the family dynamic is settled at this point. And so you're just sort of living in it.
Yeah. But like those things are all, it sounds boring, but I think that's supposed to be the reward.
I think it only sounds boring if you're not into that kind of stuff. And I totally am into that kind of stuff.
I like it. I mean, it's
all of these ones I read where it's like the children are an integral part of it. Little Lion Daughter. There's a couple others where like the female lead comes in and like the male lead already has one or more children, and she's like, oh, and I'm going to take care of them. And then the male lead falls in love with her because of how good she is with the kids. And all. I love that shit.
I like it. I like it a lot. And I think a lot of my initial reservations were like the constant teasing of romance maybe made me suspicious of enjoying it.
Yeah.
But I got over that. I think I trust the author now, even though I like a lot of the Otome Isekai stuff. I don't know that I would trust every author I've liked so far to tackle some of this subject matter.
Yeah, I mean, there's different authors have different abilities to do realistic things, to do dramatic things. Like, yeah, not everybody would be suited to take this on. But I agree with you. I think they're doing a really good job with this.
They seem to know what they're talking about, and they know where the lines are, and they know which ones to blur, which ones to cross, which ones not to cross.
Yeah. I want to talk about the art, but before we do that, was there anything else about Richelieu that you wanted to discuss?
Should there be?
I mean, he's a very important character.
There's more that you want to discuss.
I don't know that I really want to, because I mean, he's the worst. And the way that other priest that's always hanging out with him, I forget his name, but like the way he manipulates that guy is like, this is really messed up. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, he has to die by the end. Like this is a character that's
by falling from the top of a church into a flaming pyre.
Yeah. The parallels are so weird. I mean,
the what's his name from Hunchback is much more over the top. Richelieu is very subdued.
But if Richelieu burst into song, that's what he'd sing.
Well, no, even like his day-to-day talking, Richelieu is very subdued and always like quiet and like very, everything he says is very focused and like on purpose.
That's because he's channeling it, because if he loses control for a second, like those are the scariest kinds of people.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Yeah.
Because he's going to snap one day, and that's how he's going to go out. That's how he's going to die. He's going to snap and he's going to go on some kind of Christy rampage. And
yeah, I think he was probably always a psychopath. And then his near death experience was like just it snapped him, you know.
That's the serial killer thing. Something triad. It's like natural tendency towards it, plus head injury.
Yeah.
Plus childhood trauma.
Well, suffice to say, don't be in a room with just him alone.
Or any church man.
Well, yeah. Yeah, so art.
So this is where I'm getting into my rubric. So we've been talking about design in this. So here's what I was thinking. This is kind of based on the rubric we do for Words About Books, but here's what I was thinking for the Otome Isekai. General category, like content and ideas, which is sort of like how good is the overall content? Are there any original ideas? Do they develop their ideas? Like, why would you read this story above others?
Mm-hmm.
Next category would be pacing. Does it move too fast, too slow, just right?
Mm-hmm. Which is a good one, because there's a couple series I read that are like, what are you doing? There's like two time skips in one chapter. There's like, you're moving from scene to scene where like one thing happens and then you're moving on to the next. It's like, what are you doing? Slow down. And then it'll take 14 chapters to be at one ball. And it's like, oh my God.
Yeah, pacing and organization are kind of the same category. So like, it's going to be like, if it takes a lot, if it's hard to follow and that's not intentional, that would be a low pacing score. So the next category, and this is where I'm not sure, romance.
I think that definitely needs to be its own category. Yeah.
Okay. Cause in this one, like this was the one that made me start thinking about it, is like, I could give this a really high content and idea score. The romance was a little shaky for me, but
yeah, this would be one where the romance would probably not be as high, but given that romance is a central part of most of these, it definitely needs to be its own category. And sometimes you'll probably get series where like the general content is low and romance is really high just because they spend all their time on romance.
Yeah. So the next category would be art, which is what we were about to talk about. Cause we always talk about the art. The way I'm weighting this is like, I have very well designed rating systems. The goal with the rating system, by the way, is that I will put in like, you give each category a 1 to 5 score, 5 being the highest, 1 being the lowest.
Mm-hmm.
And each like 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 is worth so many points. Totals up to 100 points, and you score it out of 100. And so really the lowest score anything could get is a 5. That means it got the lowest category of each. But I try to arrange this such that most people grading it tend to grade the same. Now, art is going to be one that's kind of subjective. So I wanted to put in like, what do you think like a 1 score is? Like, what is terrible art?
I almost feel like art needs to be multiple categories.
Okay.
Because to the degree that you have like your general story stuff and your romance stuff as two separate things, the art in these, there's how well does it like how consistent is it? Picking its style and sticking to it, and do the characters stay on model? So basically competency of the art.
Okay.
But then there's also like the, I don't know what the right word would be, but like how brilliant is it? You know, like,
okay, so there's
all of the extra bits, because there's a specific series that I'm thinking of where all of the extra stuff, the light flare, the lens flares and the particle effects and the patterns and the backgrounds and everything is crazy, crazy good. But the character models are terrible. And like, okay, in that series, I would say, you know, the art competency is, you know, a 2, whereas the art, and we have to find a word for this, but the extra part of the art is a 4 or 5, you know?
Okay. So
maybe cool factor.
What if we called it, what if we said artistic competency and artistic flourish?
Okay. Yeah, that'll work.
And we'll define what we mean by that in the column stuff. And I'll do a blog post about this, so it's all there for people to see.
Go to animepodcasterreincarnation.com.
So then the last two categories are where you, so I want these first four or first five now, they are usually like, well-defined, a story sort of either fits within the rating or not. And I kind of want people to see them and make it a little bit objective. There's room, there's wiggle room, but I want most people to score these about the same, where you get to put your own personal touch on it. We did this with Words About Books and it's worked out pretty well. Personal preference.
Mm-hmm.
And the personal preference is just how much you liked it. This is where we separate. Is it well done from did you like it?
And I think this is where we're going to see the deviation from the way that we've been rating these so far. Because so far we've basically been rating these exclusively on personal preference.
Yes.
Now there's been some objective things that we've talked about that go into that, of like how well was the art done, how well executed is the story, those kind of things. But when it came down to it, it was, oh, this is an 8 for me because I really liked these things. Whereas now we're going to have mostly objective ratings and then add on the personal preference at the top.
Yeah. And it is my review philosophy is it's totally fine to love something that isn't like executed perfectly.
Yeah. I mean, it's totally possible to go through a series and go, I'm giving this all 2s, but on personal preference, it's a 5. Because
yeah,
this thing that they do just hits me in just the right way.
Yep, exactly. And then the next one is probably another factor in our ratings. Recommendation strength. How and who would you recommend this to? And the way I grade recommendation strength is, one is you wouldn't recommend this to anyone. It's terrible. And 5 is you could recommend this to anyone. So the more generally it appeals, or the more widely it appeals, the better. But the a 4 could be like a strong recommendation to fans of Otome Isekai, but maybe not people outside of that.
I feel like one in 5 is easy. The in-between numbers can be hard because like at a 4, you could say there is one specific kind of person that will be super into this. Can't give it a 5 because you can't recommend it to everybody, but the kind of person who would like this will like it so much that I'm going to give this a 4. Or on the flip side of that, you have this can be recommended to a lot of people, but not this certain group of people. And so that also would fall under a 4.
So we could tweak this if we want. We could, so with Words About Books, we go by like how many people you could recommend it to. But with this, we could make like 5, everyone would love this. 4, someone would love this a lot. 3, it's pretty good. I think most people would enjoy it to pass the time. 2, there's only a handful of people that are really going to enjoy this and they're not going to, it's not going to like change their lives. And then 1 is you recommend it to no one.
I don't know that we really need to. I think
the, so I can tell you the Words About Books one, this is how it goes. 1, do not recommend to anyone. 2, recommend to a very niche audience that wouldn't care about Major Flaws. 3, weak recommendation to genre fans. 4, strong recommendation to genre fans, weak recommendation to general audience. 5, strong recommendation to general audience.
Yeah, I suppose so.
We can live with the Words About Books. This can be refined.
Plenty of people will have opinions on this. So please let us know what those opinions are. You can leave a comment on the blog, or you can, I guess Twitter is still around. You can hit me up on Twitter.
I'll post the text I come up with for everything on the blog. Mm-hmm. And if there's any comments or any thoughts, go ahead, let me know and we can incorporate it. Cause like ultimately the only reason to score something is to give people an idea of whether or not they want to read it.
It's also like, fun.
It is fun. Yeah. But like in terms of like, I'm not trying to say this is a 75 out of 100 book. That is all it will ever be. That is all it is allowed to be. Mm. I am correct. You're incorrect. I'm not trying to come up with a number that proves I'm right and you're wrong.
Yeah.
Like that's the main thing. I'm just trying to sort of quantify it. Like with Words About Books, we had a problem with like when you have 5 stars and that's all you have. Like I've seen people give Beowulf 2 stars, boring. And it's like, well, yeah, it is. But like also it's very important. And you know, you like you're reading it. If you're comparing Beowulf to like, I don't know, the Da Vinci Code. I don't know why I keep talking about the Da Vinci Code today, but like, yeah, I guess the Da Vinci Code is more exciting.
Is there a rewrite of Beowulf that's more like geared towards modern sensibilities?
There is actually, there's a couple. There is a children's book.
Oh my God.
Called, I think it's called Beowulf. And it's about like a girl who, it follows the exact same plot points of Beowulf, but for children. And they change all the, like the people to like monsters and they don't kill anyone. And it's,
because I feel like a lot of the time, especially with very old stories, it's the main plot points that are important, and all of the interstitial stuff doesn't matter that much. So if you rewrite it for a modern audience, as long as you hit those main plot points, I think you can sort of do whatever you want with it.
That's my philosophy. When it comes to like rating like a myth, like the Iliad or something like that, like you can't rate that the way you would rate other fiction. Yeah. It's like trying to rate the Bible as fiction, which, you know, a lot of people think it is, but I've taken a Bible as literature course, but you have to understand to the people writing it, it wasn't. So
some of them at least.
Yeah. There's a difference in approach, but yeah, that's sort of the general thing. Mm-hmm. Open to change. I don't want you to get mad at me. I never want you to get mad at me, but like in this case, I'm open to other ideas. I know I'm fairly new to this community.
You can get mad at me. I argue with people on the internet. That's fine. I got into an argument with people on Bato the other day.
Oh no.
And let me tell you what, I was the correct one.
I'll argue if I have strong feelings, but in this case, in terms of like how to rate Otome Isekai, I think people who have read more Otome Isekai than me probably know better. I'm willing to listen. So
in the case of my argument on Bato the other day, I was arguing as a father, and none of those other people, well, I'm sure some of them have kids, but I was speaking from experience and they were not.
I read that, and I'm not a father, but I have known more than a few pregnant women, and I have known what makes them deeply upset, especially in that third trimester. yeah, it is.
It didn't help that half of the arguments were, but he's so sexy.
Yeah,
it's I like know. That doesn't make it okay.
trust me, I don't think. I think that goes right out the window at a certain point. but yeah. Okay. So I'll fill out the text of these, but if you want to talk about art and talk about, all that stuff, I just wanted to sort of fill out the rubric so we can do our final ratings.
Much, much less objective or subjective, much more objective going forward.
Yes.
See if people like that.
See if they like it. We'll see if we can graph it. That does mean we'll eventually have to read a bad Otome Isekai. You'll eventually have to.
Well, I have a couple that I'm already reading.
We've got to calibrate the chart. So
that'll be more of a
community pick.
That'll be more of a slog for you than it will be for me.
In fact,
I know exactly the one that I'm going to send you to calibrate our low end.
All right. Okay, perfect. That'll be a great episode. All right. So the art.
Yeah. So as far as I'm concerned, this is one of the best drawn and most consistent series I've ever read.
I would agree. There's a lot of hand-drawn stuff, which I always love to see. I'm always going to have a slight bias towards that. They still make use of the assets, but I think it's sort of the best use of it. Mm-hmm. They use a lot of visual language to assist in telling this story. The font changes, the film grain for the flashbacks. Lighting. Yeah.
The lighting is so good. Like it says there's only one artist on this. If they are actually the only one doing the art, they're doing such a good job. Like just the way everything, the finishing pass that they do on this stuff just like brings it to life.
Oh yeah. Like I mean, you know, I'm always picky about this. Like I'm the one who edits Dairy Queens into the background of empty panels when I don't see a background. I almost always find like one panel that they've screwed up, and I'm sure I could if I really went back and looked for it, but nothing jumped out at me on this one. And even the cartoony stuff, which I don't usually like, that is a trope in anime that I hate, is especially in like Full Metal Alchemist, where we're having a brutal scene where a man combined his daughter and his dog into some sort of monster. And then like next episode, Ed's a cartoon and he's running around chasing Al back and forth across the screen. I hate that. They do that in this, but it feels a little bit better because they're having, you know, charming family moments and they hand draw it and it's cute. It doesn't cross the line. It doesn't feel forced the way it does in a lot of other stuff. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like a cheat for like, oh, I get to do it cartoony so that I don't have to draw this panel today.
Yeah. Right. It's used where it makes sense to use it.
Yeah. I didn't really detect a hint of laziness, which could be the reason for the long hiatus and makes me a lot more forgiving of it.
Maybe. Just to give people some idea, there was 260 days between when, well, at least when I got chapters, and that was right in the middle of an arc. Cause they do explicitly, mark these as different arcs. They all have like the name of the arc and then 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah. Winter vacation, summer vacation.
Yeah.
The trial.
Yeah. I'm looking at the list here. Chapter 82, 363 days ago. Chapter 83, 102 days ago.
Oof.
Yeah.
I thought they broke it the season. Something might
that would make sense. Yeah. Let me see. End of. It looks like there were about 100 days between the end of season one and the start of season two, which is where it makes sense. So, and this could just be where I'm reading this, that it somebody didn't release it properly or something. But I think I remember reading something about them taking a break. But it's back now, so everything's fine.
They'll probably never take a break again.
They better not. But yeah, I think everything that they're doing with the art it's done to such a high degree. It out of all of the ones that we've done so far, it might be the best art. Which
it's
is,
up there.
I think yeah. It's saying a lot because most of what we've seen so far is really good art. Now, some of it was more just like very competent and not necessarily had that flourish. But this does both. It's highly competent and it's got lots and lots of flourish.
Yeah, I agree. I'd give this full marks for art.
Well, do you want to give it full marks? Should we start going through?
Yeah.
All right. So let's go down the list and we will rate each of these as we go. So we got 7 categories. Do we just start at the top and we'll go through it?
Yeah.
All right. So content and ideas. I think as we have already alluded to, there's a lot of stuff going on here. I think a lot of it is done really well. It's well structured to really give you all of the information you need, except for those little bits that it doesn't tell you. It's going to keep stringing you along. So what are you going to give this?
I would probably give it a 4 for content and ideas. The reason it doesn't get a perfect is because there is a lot that is just iterating on a formula. What it does different, it does well. And what it borrows, it does well too. But, this isn't like the most original Otome Isekai I've ever read. But I do think that the relationship dynamics are pretty interesting, pretty original, pretty well developed.
I'm also going to go with a 4 on this one, but I will say I don't know that I would necessarily say that this is working off of tropes. There's certainly some stuff in there that is a bit tropey, but I think for the most part, it's bringing its own ideas to the table.
It's part of a genre, but there is originality within it.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. All right, pacing. So as we mentioned, this is 95 chapters out so far, and basically the main thing that has happened is the trial. Besides that, not really much has happened.
Yeah, I was going to say, I kind of want to lean towards a 3 for this one. Because for me, I was tempted to start skimming. Like I said, I'll be honest, part of the reason I go for a 3 is because if it hadn't come so highly recommended by so many people, I probably would have dropped it.
It's definitely
worth the wait for sure, but
I think there's some subjectiveness to this, because while I can basically agree with you for the most part, I'm going to give this a 4 for pacing.
Okay.
As I read this, there was no point in which I thought this is taking a while. I wish it would move on. However, looking back on it, I do see that it could have moved faster. So because the feeling I got was not that, I have to rate it higher, but I can't give it a 5, obviously, because it was slow.
Yeah. I see the argument for it. And I thought about it too, because like the quiet moments you spend with the kids are a big part of it, and it needs to be relaxing. I just think it, at some points, it would have benefited the story to go a little bit quicker.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on to romance. I'm going to give this a 3.
Give me your logic and I'll tell you this. You might change my score.
So there's two sides to this. First of all, there's not enough romance. Mm-hmm. Second of all, the romance that there is, I'm not really on board for. Personally, the dynamic between Shuri and Nora, which is being played as the primary romance plot at this point, I'm not into it. Like, I think it's fine, which is why I'm giving it a 3, but I think it could be better. I think, you know, maybe if they had Nora be a little bit older to start or something, like there's just enough peripheral stuff going on with the romance that it doesn't quite work for me.
Okay. So this is to help me build the rubric. What would a 2 be for you?
A 2 would probably be what's going on here, but even showing it even less. So there's some weirdness to it and there's even less of it.
Okay. Yeah, I think you talked me up to a 3. I was maybe leaning 2, but I do think if I think a 2 for me would be some of the fine lines this one walked, if it stepped over them.
I think if you focus on the stuff going on with Jeremy and Theo and sort of paint that more as romance and less as the content and ideas of them just being sort of plot points, then it would be a 2. But if you just focus and say, what is the actual romance going on here? Like that encapsulating it. Cause when I talk about the romance in this series, I throw out Theo completely because that's completely one-sided. I push the Jeremy stuff to the side because the series doesn't outright go, this is not going to happen. There's obviously some stuff going on with Jeremy and he's integral to all of this. And so I can't completely push that one to the side and say this doesn't exist, which drags it down. If it was only Nora and Shuri the whole time, then I'd probably give it a 4. And it wouldn't be a 5 because there's not enough of it. And also it's sort of weird because of the maturity difference.
That's the challenge, is it doesn't work for me yet. Now, as I'm talking about it, I'm thinking one thing we need to mark down when we do these ratings is like what chapter we were on when we did them. Because I could adjust this rating if I have the whole thing and it winds up being a beautiful love story.
True. And we talked about this offline a little bit, but at some point we'll probably need to revisit the series that we've done so far. And maybe we'll just spend, you know, 10 minutes on each or something like that. Some of them will have completed by then. And so those ones I think we'll definitely want to, sort of re rate based on that. Any of the ones that aren't done, though, I think we should not re-rate.
I agree.
But enough of has happened in a lot of these series that we do need to talk about them again. And I'm looking at Kill the Villainous for one.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Okay, so artistic competency.
I'm giving this a 5.
Yeah, for me, if you lose points in artistic competency, that's because you're actually making objective mistakes in your art. Like,
yeah,
the perspective's wrong, the paneling's bad, something like that.
I think everything that they did in this series with art, as far as competency is concerned, is excellent. Like the layouts, the camera angles,
yep.
The patterns, the backgrounds, like just everything was just so well executed.
Yeah. Yeah, and to give you an idea, like the lowest mark for me is going to be like if your layouts make no sense and your anatomy is garbage.
Yeah.
And
well, and that's something we should point out because the anatomy in this one, while not necessarily realistic human anatomy, it is on model at all times.
Proportional. It's it's not like you got one arm longer than the other. You got like, and it's not intentional.
Yeah.
That's the other thing is you're just not controlling. You're not in control of the art.
Yeah.
And then Flourish.
Flourish up. This is a tough one. I'm sitting between a 4 and a 5 here.
I think I'd go to a 4. I think Master Villainous the Invincible maybe would have gone higher for me because I really liked some of the stuff they were doing with the layouts. The one thing I was missing from this that would have bumped it up to a 5 is making some use of the scrolling.
Yeah. Now, so we have different experiences with that since I read primarily on my computer. And you're reading primarily on your phone at this point. But I do have some idea of how this stuff works. I do read on my phone sometimes. They definitely didn't play with the format as much as Master Villainous did. I think for me, the problem I'm having is I'm leaning towards a 4, but I can't really articulate the reason why I'm bringing it down.
It could have gone further.
Yeah, there's it definitely room
to go further.
I think the stuff that they did do, like I said, with the lighting, with the colors and sort of the filters and stuff like that that they did is really, really well done. And I don't know that there's a lot more you could do there.
I would add in there's only a couple other series we've read that I would go as high as 4 on for this. So 4 is a respectable score, I think.
All right. So I'm going to give it a 4.
Personal preference.
This is the interesting one, right?
Okay.
So if I think about other series where I'm pretty much exclusively rating it on personal preference, the 1 to 5 scale isn't enough.
Oh.
I need some demarcations there. The 1 to 10. Works pretty well for me because a lot of stuff I really, really like, but it doesn't quite reach that perfect level of that 10 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I like a 9. I like having a 9, right? And so for this one, I'm basically at, 4.5, right? And so on that line,
we have allowed half points. You can give it, you could give it somewhere. So because a 4 would give it 11 points towards the final score, a 5 would give it 14. You could give it somewhere between that if you want.
Oh, okay. Gonna throw that into the mix right at the end, huh?
Well, Nate started doing that on Words Above Books. So,
well, I don't want to go with what he does.
I can't stop him. So.
Oh my. Okay. I'm going to go with a 4. So the only reason this isn't a 5 for me is because it doesn't have enough of the romance stuff. The other cute breathing room stuff that they do with the family and all that is great. And it makes it's so good. But in these series, I need some more of that romance, some of that, you know, staring longingly into each other's eyes and stuff. So maybe if it turns around and Nora becomes a really great male lead, maybe that it would bump up to a 5 in the future. But for now, I'm going to have to set it at a 4.
I agree. I'm with you on the same point of, I think this has the potential to go for a 5 for me. There's a lot of mysteries yet that need to be resolved, a lot of relationships mm-hmm. that need to finish their arcs. And if the author sticks the landing, and I know they've already written the web novel, so maybe they have, I don't know though. Based on what I've seen in the comic thus far, it's a 4. If everything sticks the landing, it'll be a 5.
That's really interesting that you're going to go with 4 on this, considering how long it took you to...
was a rocky start, but that's why I say it's worth it. Mm-hmm. Like, you guys were right to recommend it as highly as you did. And I'm glad I trusted you. Because...
hey, I haven't gotten it wrong so far.
No, this is definitely like... This is the best part about doing these podcasts, is when you find something you would not have checked out at all otherwise.
You mean like an entire genre?
The entirety of Otome Isekai for me. But even if we had stopped the podcast last episode, I would not have read this. So, no, I was. It's a nice surprise. 30, like I said, 20 chapters in, I was like, oh no, guys, this might be the first 5 I give, like 5 out of 10. But.
All right. So lastly, recommendation strength. And this one, this will be interesting given what you just said.
this is a 4 for me as well.
Okay.
Because I'm going to say, this is a weak recommendation to somebody who's never read Otome Isekai.
Yes. Yes. I would say that.
This is not where you start.
Unless you are super into historical fiction.
Yeah.
This would be difficult to recommend to someone who hasn't read any other Otome Isekai.
But for the advanced fan, for the person who has acquired the taste.
For the person who's fully addicted.
Yes. The heroin addict. This is. I think it's probably a must read. I mean, there's not a lot like it, and originality is something I prize more highly in Otome Isekai than a lot of other things.
Yeah.
Because it's like you said, Otome Isekai fans, like these are webcomics. These are made for a phone. These are meant to be read in line or on the bus. Like, you don't need to do much except follow the formula and be okay at it. And you'll have a successful comic. So when people go the extra mile, it's very appreciated because they don't have to.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think it's time to tally these up. Looking on my side, pretty solidly at a 4, not 4 out of 10, but mostly 4s in these categories.
Yeah. So you can do it however you want. So I wound up with a total score of 72 points out of 100, and I wound up with an average score 3.9.
So I got 76 out of 100, solid 4 average. Now, here's the thing. When we go and we rate these, the scoring system is 1 to 10.
Okay.
A 76 would be
probably about an 8 out of 10.
I'd round up. 8. Yeah. I guess that works out pretty well. Yeah. Cause 8 out of 10 is probably what I'd rate this. If we were doing this, without the rubric, I would have wavered between an 8 and a 9.
Yep.
So
that's the beauty of the rubric.
Unfortunately, the rubric is going to make me force me to pick an 8. So I'm sorry to anybody who's a 9 or a 10. But the rubric has spoken.
And again, the rubric is flexible. It's sort of just about guiding a more interesting discussion.
Yeah.
Cause you don't just want to gush. You want to talk about why it works, why it doesn't work.
Yeah. Some people want us to gush though.
Sometimes I will. Hey, I like Twilight. I gave Twilight a very low rating on my Words About Books rubric.
I mean, that's true. Just because something isn't good doesn't mean you don't like it, right?
Just because something is objectively terrible, like Twilight.
and we'll get to that. Honestly, I think that the series that we'll do to set our low bar for this, I don't actually want to do a full episode on. So I'll send it to you. Go through it at your leisure. But that will not be the the one that we're going to pick for a full episode.
Okay.
We'll do a short little bit on that in another episode to let people know, because it does not deserve a full episode. Like
not worthy of a spotlight.
No.
Okay.
Which is important, because as I said, it's going to be the low bar. That is the series that if it weren't for the fact that it's fun to rag on it in the comments, I would have dropped it. Which, if you know me, dropping something is a big deal.
Yeah, it's a monumental effort.
All right, so solid 8 out of 10. Nice. Yep. Does 76, 72 fall into? So I guess 72 would be a 7 for you, wouldn't it?
7 for me, yeah.
Too bad.
It's the rocky start.
You're going to get yelled at.
I may get yelled at. I will amend some of those scores. Like I said, if everything lands perfectly, which it very well could, I can go up.
All right. So it is, in fact, time to pick the next series. So I was thinking about this a little bit. I believe the past 3 or 4 episodes, you really haven't gotten to decide what we were going to read.
My decisions aren't that informed anyway.
Well, that's true. But however, they are more informed now.
That's true.
So I think we should pull open the document and we should actually have you pick something.
Let me see.
I would say if you want to pick between the top 4 that are currently on the list.
Okay.
I'm going to exclude the 5th one there because that one hasn't updated in a while. And so we're probably going to need to put that one to the side for a while. Oh, the 7th one down there is the other one from this author.
Yeah, I noticed that. You know what? I'm curious about A Talented Maid.
Okay.
Interesting. I like the role that maids seem to play in all of these. Often the maid is my favorite character. So
that one actually just came back from a very long hiatus. So,
all right, let's do A Talented Maid.
In fact, this was a ridiculous hiatus. So the end of season 1 was 649 days ago. And it just came back a little less than a month ago.
Hey, still beating Faraway Paladin. that light novel's been on hiatus since 2017.
Yeah, almost a 2-year hiatus, which was really rough because this is a series I really, really like.
All right.
A Talented Maid.
Put it on the books.
Let us know if you're excited for that. Leave a comment. Let us know. Well, thanks everybody for listening. Hope everybody had a good time listening to us be very objective about these romance drama series.
Bringing math into this.
Yeah, I was worried. As soon as I start have to do math, it's like, oh.
If you can't quantify how much you like something, do you even like it?
Yeah, right. Before we go, I just want to thank Segoy Mart for partnering with us. Segoy Mart is a retailer of Japanese snacks, drinks, toys, and merch. They got a lot of cool stuff that you can't get outside of Japan. You can check out the link in the description or use code APR15 at checkout to get 15% off your first order, which also helps us out. We actually got a couple dollars from them for the last month. Someone actually used our code. So shout out to whoever that was. Thanks a lot.
Get them Kit Kats.
You can always let us know what you think on our social media and tell us if you have a series you want us to cover. You can find all of our social links on our website, animepodcasterreincarnation.com, where you can also leave comments about these episodes and also find other posts and reviews that we've done. And don't forget to rate us on your podcast platform of choice. Those ratings really help out for boosting the show. And be sure to check out the regular podcast, That Time I Got Reincarnated in the Same World as an Anime Podcaster. We talk about lots of stuff related to the meta of anime and manga. So people might be interested in checking that out in addition to heroin addiction. And if you can't get enough of Ben talking about reading things, you can always check out his other podcast, Words About Books, where every once in a while they do use a rubric.
We always use it. We just don't always talk about it. Okay.
And once again, thanks for listening. We really hope you enjoyed it. Now, you'll have to excuse me. I need to get cleaned up after the manhwa bender that I went on last night. This author has definitely... I should... Let's be... fair here. Where is it? Spice and Kitty? Is that right?
Were we expecting more sophisticated? What is Spice and Kitty? I know Spice and Wolf is a thing.
Spice and Wolf is a series, yeah. Yeah, I think Spice and Kitty is the author who I'm looking at now actually also writes How to Win Over My Husband, which is also one that I read that I really like. Yeah, I think that's the author. Spice and Kitty. They really like their weird names, don't they? Actually, looking at this, the fact that they also do How to Win Over My Husband actually makes a lot of sense because that one also has a lot of messed up drama in it. So I think they found their lane. Since we're not boosted on Twitter anymore, we really need that. So although to be fair, I don't think we're ever boosted on Twitter, but even less so now that the blue check mark is important. And also because less people are using it.
Yeah, that's a whole thing.